guys. Welcome back to another Sunday of Beyond the Veil. I want to welcome back my lovely co-host, Christy, who's been out during her move. Welcome back, Christy.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah. Now, we had Jenny fill in, and she kind of held down the fort and did real good last week, but we definitely missed you. I thought we could kind of mention that we haven't really made an official announcement, but we are putting the show kind of on hiatus through the summer, and we're coming back in the fall. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's going to be a really good idea. It's going to give us time to line up a whole bunch of more amazing guests and have some experiences throughout the summer ourselves to have shows about and talk about. Our next show will be May 1st with Dave Spinks. You won't want to miss that one. And then we'll wrap up on May the 15th with Phil Kachoff. And I probably said that wrong. He'll kill me because I always say his name wrong. But for those of you that don't know who he is the owner of the famous Haunted Hill House in Mineral Wells, Texas. I have investigated this location more times than I can even count, and it is always an amazing investigation. So don't miss that one, and we'll have him talk about what he does when he's not running Haunted Hill House.
Yeah, that place is always a hotbed, too, because, you know, I've been there numerous times, too, and it's got a history of so much touching, scratching, the bite, just a lot of activity. Great that he opens it up to investigators like he does.
He's a great guy. Y'all won't want to miss that show for
yeah.
sure.
Well, with that said, tonight we have a very special guest, Mike Ricksecker of Society of Supernatural and Haunted Road Media, as well as an author of too many books, I can't even count. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to come on.
Oh,
so,
absolutely.
You know, for those that don't know you, what got you kind of spiraled into the paranormal? How old were you when you had your first experience? What got you investigating and around a group?
Sure. My first experience was as a young child, and probably the one that stands out the most is I was probably about 8 or 9 years old. Woke up in the middle of the night, and a lot of people tell a similar tale of they see a shadow person standing in the corner of the room. And of course, at that age, I had no idea what it was, and it was a solid humanoid type figure. Couldn't really tell any features. I tried to scream, and I couldn't because I was just too terrified. A little bit different with my story, however, is that this thing actually approached me, came over to my bed, leaned over, and did the oddest thing, which of course still terrified me, and it crossed my arms across my body. So it actually physically touched me and interacted with me. And then it proceeded to run down the hall into the linen closet for some reason. And it was gone. And I, jumped up out of bed and ran to my parents' room and, raving about what had just happened. And of course you're telling me that I just had a bad dream, but, I knew better than that. So, along with that, and some other, minor things that happened when I was a child that I had witnessed, one of the things that kind of, piqued my interest was the book Yankee Ghost by Hans Holzer. My mother had given me that book as a, we were moving out of Massachusetts into Ohio at the time when I was about 13 years old. And she thought it would make for an interesting way to remember the place in which I just lived. So I was fascinated by the stories, since they were, all true accounts of different things that had gone on. And so, as far as my own writing, that was something that I had, been doing since about the second grade. And it started with little mystery stories and, I had little ghost stories that I would write as well. So it's kind of something that's just always been with me, and I've, carried now throughout the years. My first paranormal investigation, which we really didn't know what the heck we were doing, it was when I was 16 years old, and a friend of ours was experiencing some activity in her bedroom where every time she would put something up on a wall in her room, it would end up falling down no matter what it was or how many tacks she used. And so we went up there to check it out. And the one friend that was with me was pretty sensitive. And when he touched this wall, his face turned all red and he started sweating, and he was just having a hard time dealing with it. But he ended up going around the rest of the upstairs there, checking out the different walls. And, you know, of course, I was fascinated by that and was trying to find out some more of the, you know, history and background of this place.
Was it like a vortex type deal that he was reacting to, or what, when he touched that wall specifically?
That wall specifically. He picked it up on it a couple of the other walls, but not as much as this one particular wall. So, you know, I was very, very inexperienced at the time, so I really wasn't sure what we were dealing with at that point. So I was fascinated by the history of the house. It was an older historic home, it's a small town. It was the downtown area. There's an old family cemetery in the backyard and things like that. So, but that was my first foray into paranormal investigating.
Wow. Now, did it continue through, like, when did you go into the Air Force? How old were you? Were you 18 or?
not quite 18. I went to the Air Force straight out of high school. I wanted to have the whole rest of the summer to spend with my friends, and I made a poor decision and made a deal with the recruiter to put a specific time slot, and he was like, well, people usually get pulled in at the end of that time slot. Now, for me, it was like the very beginning. So it was like a couple weeks after I graduated high school. I was in basic training, and I was actually in basic training for my 18th birthday.
Wow. So now, did you continue to have experiences while in the Air Force, or not really?
There were some I ended up in Alaska for 3 years, and this one apartment that I lived at seemed to have some activity near the back door that led out to this balcony. There would be a lot of noises, like rapping, coming from the door, and we had it basically blocked off because there was no point to going out to this balcony. So we had a little table with a lamp on it, and sometimes that lamp would move or you'd hear it rattle or something like that. Talked to the landlord. The landlord claimed, it wasn't anything unusual about the location, or, if there had been maybe a death there. But, most landlords aren't going to divulge that information anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I've seen some of your clips and stuff, so I wanted to ask what your strangest EVP was that you've ever caught. If you've had one,
strangest one I've ever caught.
That you're just like,
date.
What is that?
Yeah, that would be.
I
want to
see the one I'm thinking of.
probably that would be my teeth are warm, and that was caught at Black Bear Cemetery.
Yeah.
It was really strange. We had basically wrapped up the investigation for the night. The other two investigators I was with had already gone out to the car, and I wanted to do one last little walkthrough of the cemetery. And so I was just walking amongst the headstones, and all of a sudden, I didn't know it at the time, but when I went back and listened to the audio later, that was picked up. My teeth are warm. So it was really crazy.
Yeah, I would have thought, man, I heard that wrong. Something's not right. That's so strange. What about out of all the locations, was there one that was just your darkest that you feel like, I've got to get out of here, this is too intense? Or have you ever left a location just because of the energy, or no?
Not any location that I've investigated just because of the energy. There was a location this past fall that I left because of the energy, but I wasn't doing an investigation. There was a personal situation that I was trying to take care of. I had to ended up making a trip down to the backyard of an abandoned home, and just between what was going on with the situation and we're sitting there talking in an SUV, and from the I could see in the rearview mirror and the side mirrors, there are these small shadowy figures that were approaching the SUV, and there was just a really, really dark, ominous feeling in that backyard. You could feel it coming from, you feel it coming from the house, you feel it coming from the land, the woods back behind us, and then you had these shadow people that were approaching the SUV. So, I was just like, we need to get out of here. This is not cool. It's just something I wasn't prepared for. I was not going down there to investigate. So it's not like I went in there protecting myself or getting myself in the mindset of, this is what I'm about to do. It's for something completely different. What was really unusual is we finally made the decision, okay, we're going to leave. I got out of the SUV to walk back to my car, and, in the trees in the woods, I could still see the shadows, but in up above, in the treetops, I saw this white wisp jump from one treetop to another. It was really strange. So, that's really the only one that I could say that I left because of the energy. That's just because I wasn't prepared for that situation, given the other stuff that was going on.
Yeah, people don't realize how strong you have to have such a strong faith and to go to these places. Can't be weak when you go there. Now,
right.
Your books, are they all paranormal, or have you written some that are not paranormal?
Yeah, they're not all paranormal. In fact, my two first books, my first book was a mystery novel, and then I think it was like maybe the fourth was the second of the series. So I started with that. I started with mystery writing, and it was through that I've written Deadly Errors, which is the first one. Basically, I was marketing that, but I had a couple of paranormal short stories online, and that's how my publisher Schiffer, or Ghosts of Maryland, Ghosts and Legends of Oklahoma, and Campfire Tales Midwest, that's how my editor found me, was through those paranormal short stories, and then she picked up my other writing with the mystery novel and was like, you're a good writer. I like your approach. I know you only write fiction at this point. but would you be willing to, take on this project for Ghosts of Maryland? We're looking to expand our paranormal line of books, and we need somebody to take on Maryland. And so, I jumped right into that because I had already, really had that interest anyway and was already doing research and all that. So, it made sense.
What was your favorite book to write? Do you have one?
Oh, that's tough. I mean, I like all my books, and they're different. they're different in the sense that, you're talking about, Ghosts of Maryland and Ghosts and Legends of Oklahoma are straight up, true ghost tales with a lot of history involved. So, you get a lot of, researched background and history and all that stuff. And then you take a look at something like Deadly Errors and System of the Dead, which are just, they're straight up mystery novels. And, you've got a private investigator with sarcastic wit. I mean, they're completely different books. If I had to pick one, it would probably be Deadly Errors, just because it was my first. And it took me many years to write, in that detective character I had actually originally created in high school. So it's kind of one of those, lifelong dreams that took many years to finally get to. So that's probably the one that my heart pulls to the most, just because it took so long to finally get there with this book.
Yeah. Now, I was looking through your website, and you have so many projects, both in the past and current. there was one.
Right.
It was like the Barlow Mini Mysteries. Now, this is a game, and did it come to – I couldn't quite tell if you did go ahead and it was done and sold or –
Yeah, Chase Michael DeBarlo is my private investigator, and I am bringing him into the paranormal. So there's going to be that cross with the games. The mini mysteries were because I used to do a monthly newsletter, and it just got to be too much to keep up with, and I would include these mini mystery stories within the newsletter. So I have several of those that I've written, and then along the way, you know, I had there was a large game project which never came to fruition. In fact, it was from that project that I ended up writing the novel. I was writing basically a script for the game, and at some point, because it was just, you know, I mean, it was almost essentially a one-man show. My ex-wife was doing some graphics work on it as well. So I guess maybe a two-person show. It was just, you know, kind of too much to really take on for a game. I was like, well, you know, maybe we'll hold off on the game stuff for now, and I'll go ahead and turn the script into a novel, and then maybe you can pick up the game stuff, you know, after the fact. Now, there are a few mini-games that I created within the newsletters as well, and they're probably still out there available for download. If anybody still has any of those old newsletters, you can probably click on the link and still get the little files. You know, they're just small, you know, maybe like 5 or 10 minute games. It's your puzzle solving is basically what it is.
You mentioned your ex-wife doing illustration. I meant to ask you with your books if you did any.
Have I done any illustration?
I don't know if you were into that or good at drawing.
I have drawn before. I don't think any of that made it into my book. My oldest son has contributed to Ghosts and Legends of Oklahoma. And then I had Adam Tillery contributed to Encounters with the Paranormal, which is an anthology with a lot of different contributors to that. And he has his own work through Haunted Room Media that's fantastic. I don't think anything that I've drawn has actually made it into any of my books.
That's awesome that your son did. I noticed.
He's a fantastic
there was
artist.
There was a petition for Lynette's Law. So I was kind of curious. Like, did you have any charities that are like near and dear to you that you support or go do or anything? Because I saw you posting about that and supporting that.
Yeah, that was something that I had helped out with for a few years, and. Basically, that's you know, some legislation to put in place to try to safeguard people from sexual exploitation and abuse by mental health professionals. That was something that I helped out with for, 3 years.
Yeah. So for those
that
don't
know,
Crime Lab
Foundation. Part of it did, which was because that was Maryland legislation, and that was the part that passed was to get background checks. Maryland didn't have that in place, so that piece of it passed.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. But when I was reading it, for those that don't know, I guess therapists there don't have to have a background check or anything, and there was a therapist that had been in prison for like 4 years, and then I guess there was some abuse.
Yeah.
By the therapist. That's just right. Terrible.
Yeah,
that's
that
awesome.
Was,
that,
yeah,
at least the background
horrible.
Passed. Yeah. So we're you kind of started out with, well, you've lived all over. So what was the first group? Because I know you're with Oklahoma Paranormal for a while. Was there a group prior to Oklahoma?
Prior to OKPRI, no. I mean, I was basically on my own. Prior to that, there was OKPRI, and then out of OKPRI was Society of the Haunted. And when I moved out of Oklahoma, that pretty much disbanded. I kept the name, and I still have the website up. It's all old investigations at this point. I still run the Facebook page, but now I am with Society of the Supernatural with Dave Spinks and David Weatherly.
Yes, and we, speaking of which, we actually interview Dave next week. So you guys will have to tune in next week for some more.
Okay, I had a question for you.
Sure.
Where you had done a, with SOS, y'all had done a 4 days of investigations at 4 different locations. How did that work, and how did that affect you afterwards? I mean, with exhaustion and...
Yeah, that was really tiring because we had all the travel and, you know, then we're going into these, especially with the last one. The last location was the heaviest and the darkest of the lot. But, yeah, I mean, you're traveling, you're exhausted from that, and then you're going into these really heavy locations, you know, spiritually speaking. And, you know, by the time we're done with it, you know, it's like, wow. you know, I don't even want to drive home because I just want to, you know, go to sleep for the next 3 days. It was pretty taxing, but, you know, it was enlightening as well, and we picked up a lot of great activity, experienced some things that I never had before. And even, you know, right at the very end, we're experiencing all this crazy activity. It's like, wow, I'd love to stay for like another full day to, you know, figure out what, you know, what this is that we're experiencing. So it's, chocolate
what'd you
helps.
Think about the I'm sorry.
I said chocolate helps.
Yeah, chocolate helps a lot. In more ways than one when you're doing an investigation. What did you think about the Randolph County Infirmary?
Oh,
was
Randolph
that like
County
your
Infirmary.
One?
Oh, that place was great. You watched the first half hour of our week because we live stream from each of these locations. You watched the first half hour of that live stream, and you were just blown away by all the activity that we were getting. I mean, even just before we went live, we were getting disembodied voices from just up the stairs. And so we basically started on that note. Well, we just heard this disembodied voice. We get out the ghost box. You get all these different interactions. There's the EMF detector that we have in the stairs, the motion detector. Starts going off, so I go back up the stairs. David Weatherly ended up in this massive coughing fit, and he had to go outside for a little while just to kind of calm down and get over that. And when he went outside, Dave Spinks and I heard from one of the down one of the halls this really loud growl, which everybody on the live stream heard and just started coming, wow, did you hear that growl? So a lot of things are going on that night. And it was just the first half hour.
Now, have you noticed that when you do your live streams, do you seem to get more activity doing live streams, or is it just about the same?
It's really about the same because after we finish up with the live stream, we continue to film. We continue to investigate. Our investigation just isn't limited to that. We're going to be putting out a set of DVDs from these different investigations with the additional footage that we've picked up from these locations. The activity continues.
Yeah, I've always wondered about the live streaming because I know our team has kind of talked about, you know, just doing some small live streams just to see how it plays out. And so when Lisa mentioned that, I was like, oh, that was something I was really interested in learning about was the live streaming.
Yeah, it's really great technology, and you get that interaction, with the fans, with the viewers that are actually watching, and they become like another set of eyes for you too, because there's a running chat, and they'll start making comments, hey, I saw this and I saw that, and so you pick up on that, and you go and you investigate the things that they're picking up on, so they're another set of eyes.
That's awesome. Well, I think with that, let's take a quick little 4-minute break, and then when we come back, we'll talk some more about your investigations. So you guys stay tuned. Hey guys, welcome back. If you're just now joining us, we have Mike Ricksecker with us tonight. Mike, I thought we would start back up on The Haunted that you filmed. It's been a while, but it's a really good show. And just your experience that, it looked pretty dark actually when I watched it as far as the attack on the young girl that lived in the home and everything.
Yeah, we found a lot of interesting remarks about that particular episode. A lot of people said that they felt it was one of the darkest episodes, that maybe it was their favorite, that sort of stuff. And really, it was a tough case. It was a dark case. And You know, the show makes it out like, you know, we went there and investigated one time and we called up Carl Johnson and had him come out. But, no, we've been there, about 5 different times at least. And, you know, we were getting all kinds of crazy activity. But you know, the big thing was basically Towson.
Well, so it doesn't show that. Like during the filming, you said you've been out like 5 times. Like, is that part of the filming? Like, it took that many times of going out, or that was just prior to the filming, or?
That was prior to filming. You know, we were working this case, and you know, we had been in contact with the production company on a number of different cases around the area. In fact, there was almost a second case that we were going to do from the southern part of Oklahoma City. At the last minute, the husband said, no, I don't want to do it. But there was another really intense case that we were going to film for the show. But no, we had investigated beforehand and then presented the case. And, you know, the family at that time was okay with the case being submitted for consideration on television. And so, a lot of our initial investigations were before it was even, you know, an idea for a show. So, so we were just trying to help them, you know, that way without any, you know, idea that it was going to be on TV.
And the history behind it, I mean, you really did your research on that place, and it was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. You had the original homeowner had his father living there. The father was very depressed. His health was poor. He couldn't find work, and you know, he put a rifle in his mouth, pulled the trigger, killed himself. And that actually happened in the room where Towson, the girl who was having most of the problems, where the bedroom was. And so, several years later, while he didn't end up killing himself, the homeowner did actually attempt that. He was having a large blow up with his wife. She was going to leave, and he put a pistol under his chin, and he just injured himself, very badly. And, they ended up getting a divorce and all that stuff. There is a story that, and this was told to us by a retired police officer in the area, that there was a teenager who had accidentally asphyxiated himself in one of the closets. We were unable to find any corroborating report that was true. We just only had his testimony on that, so that was another one that may or may not be true. But still, there's just a lot of dark history about that location.
And the reports was like some red-eyed, was it a red-eyed child they had seen in the closet, or?
They chalked it up to being a wraith, which in this case would have been a previously human entity that had developed into something more malevolent. And so it was an adult entity that would basically hang out in the closet. She would see the red eyes. We never actually saw red eyes when we investigated. Probably the most that we saw, and this was another thing that they actually didn't show in the television show, and even though they they created a scene for it as part of the deleted scenes. And there's this one incident where the cat was in the house going crazy and ran up to the doorway of her bedroom. I was following her, and the cat stopped, looked in, and then all of a sudden peeled out around the doorway. And I was looking in the room, and there was this large black mass in the middle of the room. It didn't have a form. It was just almost like a big cloud of darkness that was just in the middle of the room, and it just slowly dissipated away. So that's probably the closest thing to what we saw, you know, whatever she was experiencing. It did not have the red eyes at that point. But she was being terrified by this thing on quite a regular basis.
Okay, we have a question for you from someone in the chat room. And she says you know her, so since you're not in chat, to tell you that Daisy says hi. But
okay, well, hello.
She wants to know if anyone has followed you home from an investigation.
I do not believe so. I say that 99% assurance. My kids for a while thought that I had brought something home when I was living in Oklahoma because occasionally the light in the on the fan in the living room would pop on by itself. So they're like, oh, you brought home a ghost. And it was popping on.
How old are your kids now?
22, 21, 19, and 14.
Wow, they're older. I didn't know you were old enough to have kids that age.
I am.
<funny.
laughs>
So are your
Mine's
kids
at seven.
Sorry.
Oh, that's a good question. No, that's good.
No, are your kids? I've got three boys too. I've got twins that are 21 in November, and I've got a 16-year-old boy. And
okay. Only
one of my twins is interested in going on any investigations with me. My youngest.
Mm-hmm.
He's sensitive. I mean, all three of them are, but he's really, really sensitive, and he refuses to go to any investigations with us. Are your any of your kids like that?
My daughter was interested for a while, and she would come out on investigations. She's been a couple of my older videos, but she has since decided that she doesn't want to be involved with it anymore, so she might change her mind later on. I mean,
yeah.
Young adult. yeah, she's the only one of the lot that was interested.
What about being empathic? Is there anything as far as you or your kids? Or?
Yeah, I would say so. It's not something that I try to tout or anything like that. People tell me that I'm more sensitive than I give myself credit for. I just, the attitude I take on it is I don't want to portray myself as something that I may not be. So I don't claim to have any of that stuff, although, sure, I do.
Well, actually, everybody to a certain degree is sensitive and empath. We're born that way. It's how we kind of open ourselves up as we grow up, as we get older, and even later on in life. You know, if we open up enough, we can welcome in those gifts. But everybody to a certain degree has got those abilities. They just shut them out.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and being involved with
before,
the paranormal and going on to different investigations and just opening yourself up to it more, you start to nurture and develop those abilities even more.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, you were also on My Ghost Story, too.
Right.
And that was about Black Bear Church. Have you been back there since, or I don't know how frequently you've been?
Not since the My Ghost Story filming, because that filming happened right as I was leaving Oklahoma. In fact, after I moved back to Maryland, I had to go back to Oklahoma to film the B-roll footage for that. So I haven't been back there in almost 4 years now, but I had investigated there, I want to say like three or four times at least. Very interesting location. It's really crazy how the darker energy is at the church and the lighter energy is in the cemetery. And we attribute the darker energy at the church to some possible occult-type practices that were being done in the back of the church. It looked like people were trying to conjure something up that they weren't aware of what they were doing. but a lot of people have reported the small shadow figures that kind of lurk around the sides of the church and peer through the windows, and then there's the crawler that's running around inside that place.
Oh, wow.
Well, someone in chat just kind of gave me a little dirt on you. They said that Spirit likes to flirt with you.
Oh, that's got to be Daisy. Yes, Daisy is very aware of that. we were investigating at the Goldenrod Showboat, what was that, about a month and a half ago? And one of the spirits there is named Annie. And I felt a little tickle behind my ear a couple of different times. And so Daisy asked if Annie would blow in my ear. And sure enough, I felt the blow in my ear. And we got a good laugh out of that, actually. And so Daisy was like, why don't you do it again? And sure enough, there it was again. So, yeah, Annie was blowing
That's
in my ear.
Funny. Yeah, the brothels, the men would always be like, you know, you're in the middle of a brothel, and they're like, you know, if you want to touch me, I'm right here. They just were always like trying to provoke. I'm like, y'all are so cheesy. Using themselves as trick objects.
We did that one time when we was at Haunted Hill House with another team that we were with at the time. And it was one of the team members I'm with now and the other team member, they were at the bottom of the stairs. It was just them two in there. And it had been a brothel at one time, of course, and one of the other team members, he took his shirt off. Mind you, he doesn't have the world's best body. And
oh my gosh.
He's like, okay, ladies, I'm here, I'm ready for you, and you can hear a Class A EVP says, put it on. I'm telling him to put it on.
That's nice.
That's awesome.
They came running out of the house, and we were laughing.
That's crazy. I love it.
Yeah, it was just
even better. He got like
cracked
too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was like, that gives me a complex.
That's great.
Brothels can be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Mike, what about trigger objects? Like, is there a particular trigger object that you used or like using that you use at multiple locations?
Well, it kind of depends on the location that you're going to. You know, what's the history behind the location? What was it? Who's there? What might be something that would you know, trigger a spirit to interact with you? And that's one of the reasons why I like to research the history and the background of the location, people that were there before going in, is so that you know I can try to figure out what might be some good trigger objects to use. Story that I can tell that's a pretty good one. Is back in October, I was at an old speakeasy. This is with Dave and David. It was actually before we formed Society of Supernatural. We were just, you know, kind of starting to investigate together and figuring out that, hey, we make a pretty good team. But the speakeasy was in Hartford City, Indiana. And at the time, Dave was trying to set up the live stream and having some problems doing that. So David and I were sitting at a table that we had set up with some different trigger objects. We had a small bottle of liquor that was sitting there with, some playing cards and some dice and poker chips. You know, just old speakeasy, so we're trying to, cater to all of that. And at first, we weren't getting a lot of interaction, a lot of activity. So David and I kind of just started a regular conversation, talking about our books and things like that. And while we're in the middle of this conversation, we heard this loud pop right in the middle of the table. Sounded like a plastic bottle, like a water bottle, as if it was expanding and made that like loud popping, crackling type sound. Except there wasn't anything on the table that could have possibly made that sound. Like, there are some plastic objects there, but nothing that could make that type of a popping sound. And so he had, I think it was the obelisk, was it the five? He got out an obelisk, started asking some questions, and first question that we asked was, okay, who made that sound? And the response back was, you. It was like, no, we didn't make that sound. You made that sound. So we started asking a lot of different questions, and using different devices. So we went with the obelisk, went with the SB7. We used some other apps. We used a regular ghost box. And all the responses to the questions that we're asking were consistent as far as, who we were talking to, who they wanted to talk to, names of different people that we were asking about, know, what happened at the speakeasy. So in between all the different devices, we are getting the same responses to the questions.
Well, Mike, we're starting to get close to the hour. I want to go ahead and hit on current projects that you have coming up. Things that are you currently working on any books?
Yeah, I'm always working on books. I've got a few of them in the works. The next one that's going to be released is a quote-unquote black version of my ghost story and case files. And so this is going to kind of get more in-depth, kind of give like a little behind-the-scenes look at the but a kind of unveiled look at the background of these different places that I've included in this book, and providing a couple of hidden secrets as well. That's something I always love to try to include in my writing and in my videos, are little Easter eggs and clues and things to try to figure out. So that will be out, I'm hoping, sometime this summer. It's suddenly become a very busy beginning to the year. I'm also working on a, I mentioned before, crossing my detective character into the paranormal. And you mentioned illustrations earlier and drawing, and this is where I'm going to, I haven't announced this yet because we haven't worked out the details, but I'm enlisting Adam Tillery, who's a fantastic illustrator, fantastic artist, into creating, he's going to basically depict a couple of scenes with his illustrations, and I'm going to write the story out of my detective character being wrapped up into the paranormal and how all that happens. So it'll be an interesting,
it'll be
an
nice
interesting
transition.
Project using different types of medium.
Wow. Now, do you have any investigations coming up with the group? Or
We have a number of different things in the works as far as investigations. We don't like to announce too far beforehand exactly where we're going. We had a couple of incidents where we've shown up at locations because we had announced beforehand where exactly we were going to be, that a couple of people showed up uninvited trying to investigate with us. I am going to be doing this coming weekend some more work. This is out of my own, personally out in Illinois. I've had a couple of I've been doing a lot of work out there recently. I've had a couple of videos out on the Goldenrod Showboat. There's been a Ghost and Legends episode, a Paranormal Roads video on that, and then I had a tour of the cemeteries that Daisy gave me a couple weeks ago. I guess it was probably almost a month ago. That was crazy. I had also released a video of this crazy wind that we were experiencing at one of the cemeteries. It was like blowing us over. So I'm going to be out there this coming week. We can do some more work there. As far as Paracons and things like that, the three of us, Society of the Supernatural, we're going to be at Pennhurst on June 4th. It's sold out. So.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, I wanted to go to that one.
I know. Well, I have a ticket. Maybe. Possibly.
Maybe.
So.
Well, I hope you do. I hope to see you there.
I know. I was looking at flights, but I don't know. They're a couple hundred, and then I got the rental car and stuff. So I'm like, it's kind of far for me.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll see.
And, we're
Texas
also going to be at, we're also going to be at PhilCon, Central Illinois, in August. I think it's middle of August. I know Dave and I are going. I don't know if David's making it out to that one. I'll have to wait and see on that. But, yeah, so we got a lot of stuff coming up.
Are y'all going to Willow's Weep at all? I think it's like August or September.
No.
With Amy Jo, I don't know if you go to that at all.
I am going to be at the Exchange Hotel. We're doing a small paranormal event, a fundraiser event down there in Virginia. That's the middle of June.
Now, are you going to continue to do live feeds with Society of the Supernatural, like with your upcoming investigations? Are you doing it with all of them, or just you're kind of picking and choosing some of them, or?
Well, we try to do it with all of them. When we are investigating Society of the Supernatural, if we are able, it depends on having an internet connection. If we can get an internet connection somehow, some way, then we will do a live stream. And we'll do the live stream for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then we'll continue investigating after that and provide the additional footage later on.
Now, where can people find you if they need an investigation, if they're home or they have questions or they just want to follow you, your website?
Where can they find all your... MikeRickSecker.com, HauntedRogueMedia.com, and SocietySupernatural.com. So those are the three websites. And then to follow us, we have the Facebook pages, my own, Mike Ricksecker, their Society of the Supernatural Facebook page, and then we have Twitter as well. And then the YouTube channel, so follow us there and watch our investigations. That's Haunted Road Media and Society of the Supernatural. Our channel, so please subscribe.
Awesome. Christy, any last words or questions before we start wrapping?
Yeah, well, actually I do. Yes. I mean, I had to step away for a little bit and deal with a sick child, so I didn't get to hear if you mentioned it or not. But I had seen where you done an investigation in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Is that true?
No, I have not been to Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Okay, I don't think I had seen something about Hot Springs. I was going to ask you if you had done the Arlington Hotel.
Yeah, I have not. The couple of investigations I've done in Arkansas was Fort Chaffee and then Boonville, the sanatorium there.
Oh, we're going to Boonville.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
Do not do
Boonville in the middle of August. Oh my God, we did that in the middle of August 1 year, and it was
the top floor has a
thermostat, and that top floor was like 105 degrees. That was crazy.
Oh shit.
We're doing that in October, aren't we, Lisa?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, that's a better time to do it.
Yeah, it'll maybe start cooling down by then.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
No, but it's a great location.
It looks like it. I've heard it is. Mm-hmm. What about Texas? You've been to Texas?
Yeah. I haven't done a lot of investigating in Texas. Jefferson. Yeah. I lived in Texas for a couple months in basic training. I've been to Texas a few times for other reasons. Oh, that was San Antonio.
My nephew's headed to San Antonio next month for his basic.
Okay. Yeah, only thing related to paranormal that I did in Texas was Jefferson.
Oh, well, there's a lot.
I've never been.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I love the town. It's great.
Well, we are kind of out of time. I hate to wrap, but I know it's been great talking to you. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime. Can't wait to talk to Dave next week and get some more dirt on you. No, that was funny about
that's
that.
That's fine. No,
like
Dave will be a good interview.
No, so you guys want next week. Mike will be in chat next week, so he can dish the dirt out on Dave.
There you go.
Oh, there you go.
That's
funny. Yeah, we need you in chat next week. So if you guys will tune in next week, May 1st we have Dave Spinks, and then May 15th we wrap our last show with Phil Kirkhoff from Haunted Hill House. All right. See you guys next week.
All right.
Thanks for calling in, Mike.
Bye.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.